on so that we can record our class. Tell me what you've been to two classes so far. So tell me what you some a high point from one of the sessions. You been to the brain class yet? Been to the courage class? What did you learn in the courage class? That's a split class, guys, girls. Tell me about it. Okay. Very cool. What about the girls? Oh, very cool. Very good. All right. Yes, sir. Don't let other people justify. Very, very good. All right. Well, this is kind of a class on a spiritual conflict or a spiritual crisis. They call it the Twister, I guess, because I get that's the tornado from the Wizard of Oz. But they want to talk about just reaction to difficult circumstances and do kind of what I call a case study. A case study is where you see what somebody has done and you get to sit back and analyze it from the outside. So if you have your Bibles, look at 1 Kings 19. First Kings 19, and Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and also how he had executed all the prophets with the sword. Now that's dropping you right in the middle of this story. What had Elijah done? All that Elijah had done. Does anybody remember that story? See, that's why I teach my students when they are preaching students, never assume biblical literacy on the part of your audience. Yes, young man. Yes, he had just had a showdown on Mount Carmel and the false prophets of Baal had lost the showdown and he'd take them down to the brook Kishon and executed them. About 450 guys. So go back to chapter 18 and we'll kind of read you in on this stuff. I mean, this is a pretty amazing deal. Probably around verse 20. And because of our time, we'll have to kind of Reader's Digest version this thing. But Elijah calls Israel together. They meet on Mount Carmel. And he starts out with this statement. How long will you falter between two opinions? If God is God, serve Him. If Baal is God, serve him. Now, this character Baal, probably correctly pronounced Baal, and they called him Baal Zebul, which meant the Baal, the Lord and the Master, or Baal the Master. The Old Testament faithful prophets called him Beelzebub, which meant Lord of the Flies. And you know where flies hang out, right? Anyway, so pretty serious trash talk about Baal. So he and Israel had been worshiping Baal. And he said, look, you either have to serve God or serve Baal. And the word he uses there, how long will you falter, is actually in Hebrew means to dance. How long will you dance between two opinions? The worship of Baal involved kind of a ritualistic dance. And so he's using a play on words. He said, how long are you guys gonna dance with two different partners? If God is God, serve Him. If Baal is God, serve Him. And the people don't answer Him. They just kind of sit there. He said, let me propose a showdown. Let me propose a contest. You build an altar to Baal. I'll raise an altar to God. And we will ask our gods to light that altar by fire. And the God that answers by fire, that's the winner. That'll be the God we serve. And the people answered, hey, this is good. The legend of Baal says that he rode a chariot that was a thundercloud. And he would reach into his quiver and pull out a lightning bolt and fire it from his arrow. He had a spear or a javelin made out of lightning. So it should be a pretty easy trick for this dude to light a fire in Israel, right? I mean, you just give him a target and he rides by on his thundercloud and zoom, he pops it. So Elijah says, since there are so many of you and only one of me, you guys go first. And so they start to build their altar. By the way, I think he's smart to have an altar running by itself, because if you run two different altars, somebody's going to say, hey, our God lit your altar. That way you can't get a confusion. I ran into these two old boys in Strickland, Mississippi, and was preaching down there, and walked in, and the guy met me at the door. He said, come here, preacher. And I walked over there. He said, this is Charlie. He said, Charlie said, why don't we buy two hogs? We'll keep them at my house. We'll put them in the feedlot. We'll feed them. We'll raise them up to the right size. And then when the fall comes, we'll sell these hogs. He said, I thought that was a good idea. Go into business, the hog business with Charlie. He said, this morning, Charlie called me on the phone. Said, one of those hogs got out of the pen, got run over in the highway. He said, I said, Charlie, whose hog was it? He said, your hog. So if you have two hogs and they get run over, one of them's your friends. Well, Elijah knows that if you got two altars running and one of them burst into flames, they're going to say, hey, our God just lit your altar just to show you he was boss. So he goes, no, we're not going to do it. You go first. And so they do. And they start this ritual trying to get Baal to answer them. And they pray. And they cry. And they dance. And they cut themselves. They do all this stuff. And in one of the saddest verses in the Bible, it says, there was no voice. No one answered. No one paid attention. I mean, it's one of the saddest verses in the Bible. These guys are false prophets, but I think on some level they really, really believe in Baal. And they believe in something that's just not real. And so here they are desperately crying out for Baal to answer them, and there was no voice, no one paid attention, no one answered. How many times do we sell out to things that aren't real? You know, the idea of being cool is a false construct. There's no such thing. There's what's trendy while you're young. 15 years from now, when you look back at your high school yearbook, you'll go, what was I thinking? Because what was cool then is not, what was cool now is not going to be cool then. And I'm not hating. I mean, my generation invented the mullet. Yes, we were in charge of the Tennessee top hat, the Texas waterfall, you know, Sears in the front, Party in the back. And you know, you look at those guys and what? And sometimes we sell our, you know, if I just had this drink or this girlfriend or this boyfriend or this pill, or if I could just do this, and we have all these ideas about what will make us valid and fulfilled, then it's just not true. When I went to school, we didn't start school till after Labor Day. That's hard for you to get your mind around. You know, we actually got the summer off, June, July, and August. And we didn't go back till Labor Day. No computers, no cell phones. You went down to the school in August, and there was a girl that you went to school with that worked at the summer job at the school, and you gave her $5. And she'd give you a locker combination and a schedule. And you filled your schedule out, and then after Labor Day, you went to school. Went down to school, paid for a locker, got a schedule. Said, oh, by the way, we've got an extra $5. We need to get an extra one. She gave it to us. And we invented a dude. We filled out a schedule for a guy named Alfonso Bates. He's not real. Never lived, never existed. But we made up a guy. So as we were walking down the halls during the first week of school, we yelled, Alfonso, what's happening? And we'd wave, and people would look, and nobody ever saw him wave back. And then we'd be in class. Alberts, Adams, Baker, Bates. Bates, Alfonso Bates, he's in the coach's office. He'll be here tomorrow. And for the first couple of weeks of school, the teachers figured out pretty quick nobody there named Alfonso. But these little freshmen and these other people would hear the name Alfonso Bates, and they thought he was real. I was the cartoonist for the school newspaper, and the school newspaper was giving away a subscription to the school newspaper at an auction. And I got to announce the winner. So I'm standing in the principal's office with the mic, the PA system going everywhere, and the winner is Alfonso Bates. So now everybody in the school has heard this kid won a subscription to, and he's not real, he doesn't exist. There are people who went, he's got a Facebook page, by the way. There are people who went to school with us 35 years ago, and if you asked them, hey, were you friends with Alfonso Bates? Oh yeah, man, we were tight. And they lie. If you saw Alfonso Bates at our school, you were on some serious medication because he wasn't there. He never existed. And yet in order to fit in order to be cool, they will tell you, oh yeah, I knew him. He was popular. He's popular in your imagination because he never existed. And that's what these guys were doing. They're worshiping something and trying to make themselves feel better. And it's a false construct. Finally, at the time of the evening sacrifice, Elijah calls the people to him. And he builds an altar. Now, the altar he's building is not very impressive. God told Moses, when you build an altar to me, you don't alter that with an iron tool. You've corrupted it. You pull the rocks out of the ground, you stack them up. The altars you see pictures of that are dressed and polished, nothing like that. God said, it's not about the rocks, it's about me. And you stack these rocks up. So he stacks up 12 field stones, puts the wood on it, puts the ox on it. They dig a trench around and they start pouring water over the top of it. There's a drought going on, so pouring water over this thing is like pouring liquid gold. They pour enough water on this thing that it fills up a trough around it that'll hold 5 quarts, a little over a gallon of water. And at the time of the evening sacrifice, Elijah gathers the people together. And he just simply says, God, please let these people know that I'm your prophet. Please let these people know I've done this at your request and that you are the God in Israel. And the Bible says fire fell from heaven. It consumed the sacrifice. It consumed the wood. It consumed the altar. It licked up the dust and it licked up the water out of the trough. And the people begin to shout, the Lord, He is God, the Lord, He is God. And Elijah says, you take those prophets down to the brook Kishon because they're false prophets and you execute them. That's the story Ahab takes to Jezebel. He goes to Jezebel and doesn't just say, hey, she killed a bunch of your prophets. He says, he killed a bunch of your prophets after God lit a fire on request and burned an altar into dust. Now, if you're Jezebel and you're the wicked queen of Israel and you get this message, how do you think that should affect you? If you're the queen who thinks Baal is God, how do you think that should affect you? Yeah, you'd think that maybe she would get a little insecure here. Yes, sir. Yeah, you know, she, all of a sudden, you know, she realized, I've been fooled, I've been duped, I've been conned. But you know, that's not her reaction. Listen to her reaction. 1 Kings chapter 19. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, had executed the prophets with the edge of the sword. And Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so let the gods do to me, and even more also, if I do not make your life as one of the life of them by tomorrow about this time. So she gets the message that God has answered this prayer. She gets the message that God has allowed Elijah to execute these prophets. And she says, I've asked the gods, I've invoked their powers to punish me if you're not a dead man by this time tomorrow. Now, if you get a note like that, the wicked evil queen sends you the message that says, hey, I'm going to kill you by this time tomorrow, and if I don't, I've asked the gods to be involved in it. What kind of message do you send back to Jezebel? I mean, this is a nasty gram, right? Challenge accepted. Dear Jezebel, meet me on Mount Carmel. Wear something cool because it's going to get warm. And you stand over there and I'll stand way over here and you ask your God to kill me and I'll ask my God to kill you and we'll see how that works out for you. Right? I mean, that's what I'm going to do because you've just stood on Mount Carmel and God has on demand lit a fire. Hey, God, she wants one of us to die. You know? But he doesn't do that. Elijah, when he heard this, arose, ran for his life, went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and he left his servant there. And he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and he came and he sat down under a broom tree, and he prayed that he might die. And he said, it is enough now, Lord, take my life, I'm no better than my father's. You ever been discouraged? You ever had something happen? We call that a precipitating event. You ever had anything happen in your life that made you want to quit? I mean, here's the thing. He's afraid. He's discouraged. And in an attempt to insulate himself, get a little space, he isolates himself. He takes his servant, leaves his servant, and walks as far as he can walk in a day. And when he gets way, way out there, the first thing he says is, it's enough. Now, what does enough mean? Yes, ma'am. I'm ready to die. Think about when Jesus is on the cross and he says, it is finished. And compare that to Elijah saying, it is enough. Two different concepts, isn't it? I think sometimes we get a twister in our lives. We get a precipitating event. We get something that discourages us and we go, I'm done. I'm not going to do that anymore. How many times have you let circumstances let you say, that's as far as I'm going in Christianity? How many times have we let somebody discourage? And by the way, what has actually happened in Elijah's life? Got a fire from heaven, ends a 3-year drought, prays and it rains. And then Jezebel sends him this message. Has Jezebel actually done anything to him? Has Jezebel ever been able to do anything to him? So all of a sudden, the precipitating event here is not an actual event, it's a perceived event. He allows what she says she's going to do to be more powerful than what he's already seen God do. He allows what she says to have more power than the Word of God has. Now, how often do we do that? I'm from a different generation. I'm cut from a little rougher cloth. And I don't mean to be insensitive, but this bullying thing about to wear me out. I'm about to lose my mind up in here. Because people come and say, somebody said something about me, or somebody disagreed with me, or somebody didn't like something. And folks, that's not bullying. Other people's words only have the power you give them. Period. And nothing you say to me controls my life. And if I let you control something that doesn't belong to you, but it actually belongs to me, I've given you power not only to control my life, but to ruin my life. My buddy Brandon, who teaches at this jiu-jitsu school, said, Lonnie, would you make some videos for our group and add some life lessons into them? So I talked about distance. When you're in a wrestling match or self-defense situation, you create frames and distance between you and the other person. Whoever controls the battle of connections will win the exchange. Space equals escape, contact equals control. And I said, if you allow somebody that you're wrestling with to control something that doesn't belong to them, if you let me have your wrist or your elbow or your shoulder or your knee or your ankle, I'll ruin your day. If you let somebody control something that doesn't belong to them, they'll hurt you. If you let somebody have control of your self-esteem, your self-worth, your authenticity, your spirituality, your happiness, they'll ruin your life. Elijah has let her words control him. If I had the ability, I mean seriously, if I had the ability, if I had the Jedi mind tricks and I could make you mad, then I could make you happy, couldn't I? See, if I could say something that made you mad, I could say the opposite and make you happy. If I could make you mad, I could make you happy. If I could make you drink, I could make you sober. If I could make you leave the church, I could make you stay here every Sunday. If I could make you kill yourself, I could keep you alive. If I could make you not like me, I could make you like me. And yet so many times we allow other people's words to make us, and the opposite side of that is that sometimes I feel responsible for things that I can't control. You choose to feel the way you choose to feel, period, end of line, done. Because if you're doing something that I wouldn't choose for you to do, then I'm not driving this bus. Does that make sense? You know, my wife calls and says, you're in charge of supper, and I go, not broccoli again. Well, I'm an idiot. If I'm in charge of supper, we're having steak and french fries and donuts and chocolate milk. There'll be no broccoli in the house. But if she says you're in charge and I choose something I don't like, that's dumb. Well, when somebody says something and you say, well, I think I let that hurt my feelings. I think I let that ruin my life. I think I let that discourage me. Elijah is allowing Jezebel to have control over something she doesn't own. And he lets it ruin him. I do this thing sometimes with the fifth graders. And if you're taking notes, this will be a good little chart. On the right side of your paper, draw a little box. If you can draw a doghouse, draw a doghouse. And label the doghouse Fido. F-I-D-O. That's where Fido lives. Fido stands for forget it, drive on. F-I-D-O, Fido, forget it, drive on. And when somebody says something to me, I ask a series of questions. Question number one, is it true? Now, when somebody says something about you or to you, it's either true or it's not true, right? Now, if you say something about me and it's not true, guess who gets it? The dog, Fido, forget it, drive on. You know, somebody walk up to me and say, Lonnie, your ears are purple. Well, I shaved my head this morning, looked in the mirror. Guess what? My ears are not purple, so it's not true. Forget it, drive on. Now, sometimes somebody says something to you, and it is true. Lonnie, you are short and bald. Well, that is absolute gospel truth, isn't it? Second question, can I change it? No. And so if you say something about me and it's true, then I ask, can I change it? And if it doesn't need to be changed, or if I can't change it, guess who gets it? Fido, forget it, drive on. Well, Lonnie, not only are you short and bald, but you're a little fluffy around the edges. Is that true? Yeah. Could I change it? Yeah, my doctor says for a guy my height, I should weigh 149 pounds. I'd have to have a flesh-eating virus to weigh 149 pounds. Last time I saw 149 was on a sign going to Memphis. I'm telling you, there ain't no way this kid's ever going to weigh 149 pounds. Did I mention that one of my hobbies is jiu-jitsu? I wrestle with some cage fighters. I wrestle a guy that is number one in his weight division. I wrestle a guy named Zeke Kelly. Zeke Kelly has a 20-inch bicep, weighs about 220 pounds. If I weighed 149 pounds, he'd throw me around like a bag of potato chips. Listen, this dude's a monster. You better bring a lunch when you deal with him. It's an all-day job. So, yeah, I could weigh less, but for what I do as a hobby, I kind of like to walk around about 185 pounds. That works for me. So it's true, yeah, I'm a little fluffy. Can I change it? Absolutely. Does it need to be changed? Not for what I want to do. And you make decisions about who you are, what you believe, and what you're going to stand up for. And if you make the decision that says this does not need to be changed, and yet I have the power to hurt your feelings over it, you're not that committed to it. Because once you decide this is how I'm going to be, if it still bothers you, you're being intellectually dishonest to say this is my choice, but it still bothers me. You're giving me one of these messages. I don't tolerate that very well. I do this pretty good. I do this really good. I don't do this at all. You know, sometimes I end up with the kids who manifest things in my office. I had a guy come into my office, black shoes, black socks, black pants, black shirt, black hair, black eyeshadow, black nail polish. I said, hey, what do you mean by this costume? He goes, I'm not wearing a costume. I said, well, you don't get dressed by accident, okay? You realize that. The seventh grade boys get dressed by accident, but they'll grow out of that. You know, they get up in the morning and go, oh, yeah, and they put it on. It's inside out. I wore it so I could read it. You know, I mean, it's just a weird deal to be a seventh grade boy. But for the most part, I said, so what does this mean? You didn't get dressed by accident. It doesn't mean anything. I said, well, if it doesn't mean anything, then you won't mind if your parents ask you not to wear it. Another guy comes in, black, 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 black. I said, what does this mean? He goes, well, I go to this really preppy school, and people at that school won't talk to you if you don't have a certain symbol on your shirt, if you don't have a certain logo on your glasses. He said, I'm tired of that drama. I want people to talk to me not for what I wear, but for who I am, and the people who talk to me are my friends. That's legit. I can deal with that. Carry on. But now, if you wear a no trespassing sign, and nobody trespasses, don't be mad at them because they didn't trespass, right? If you act aloof and stuck up and hard to talk to and nobody talks to you, don't go whining and saying, well, nobody's my friend. If you quit coming to events and you don't call people and people, you don't text people and you don't return their calls, don't tell me, oh, I don't fit in with the youth group anymore. You're in charge of how you react to folks. Okay? So, is it true? Yeah. Can I change it? No. Does it need to be changed? No. Fido gets it. Drive on. Now, if you tell me something that's true and it's changeable and it needs to change, you just told me something I needed to hear. You just told me something to make me a better person. If you're uncoachable as an athlete and you don't make the changes the coach tells you to make, you'll never be a good athlete. If you're uncoachable as a musician or a mathematician and you won't take advice from people, you have a fixed mindset and you'll never get into a growth mindset. So she says something about Elijah and he allows her to have more power than she should with her words. And other people's words only have the power you give them. Romans chapter 1 verse 16, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God to salvation to everyone who believes. God's word is limited in your life by whether or not you believe it. And if you don't believe God's word, He has no power in your life. My words don't have any power in your life if you don't believe them, whether they're good words or bad words. So here's Elijah. He's let what she says be more powerful than what God has said. He's let what she's going to do be more powerful than what God has already done. And his response to it is to go out by himself into the wilderness and say, I quit. Now listen, when God asked him, what are you doing here? What his explanation is. Look at 1 Kings 19. Verse 9. And he went into a cave and he spent the night in that place. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Now look at verse 10. Tell me what Elijah says. First part of his response is what? And he said what? I've been very zealous for the Lord of hosts. What does that mean? What does it mean to be zealous? Invigorated. The cheerleaders at your school are zealous for the football team to win. They are super hyper peppy people. They bounce around like little squirrels. Yay! Okay? They even cheer in the rain, right? That's what he means. He says, I'm on fire for you, God. I'm one of your cheerleaders. I've been very zealous. Then what else does he say? Lord, I'm your boy. I'm zealous for you. I'm on your side. I'm on your team. I'm cheering for you. And then what does he say? Okay, the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant. I'm very zealous for you. But they forsook your covenant. What else did they do? You tore down my altars. What else did they do? They killed all your prophets. And then what does he say? I'm the only guy left. And then there's one more they statement. And they're going to kill me too. He says six things in his excuse to God and four of them are about other people. You realize that? When you have trouble, it's very easy to talk about what they did or they didn't do, what they said or they didn't say. See, you talk about the elders and the preacher and the youth minister and other kids. And the only thing Elijah says about himself is positive. I'm your boy. I'm on your side. I'm zealous and I'm the Lone Ranger. How accurate is that? You ever been in trouble with somebody else and told the story where you were the bad guy? You know, I had a problem at school day and I was just rude. No, I had trouble at school day and that guy was a jerk. That teacher doesn't know how to teach. It's, you know, that referee is an idiot. You know, we never make it our fault. Elijah's doing the same thing. He's covering his tracks because he's not willing to accept responsibility and accountability for his own troubles. This will shock you, but I like a song by a girl named Pink. I know I don't look like a guy that listens to Pink. I was driving in the wilderness somewhere and didn't have a good radio station. And I heard, but one of the lines in her song says, I'm at war with the person in the mirror. That's a cool line. I don't care who sang it. When you have trouble, quit looking at them and go check that dude out in the mirror. Go check that young lady out in the mirror. Because that's where you can control some stuff. And if I start blaming my actions on what you've done or not done or what you've said or not, that, you know, when my daughter was little, she's 28 now. We have two grandkids. But when she was a teenager, boys would come to my house. There's nothing wrong with being a boy. You don't come to my house. Well, my daughter's there. But they'd come to my house, and I would try to tolerate such. But I didn't always do a good job. I'd give them nicknames. I call one kid Target. Draw chalk outlines in the driveway, you know. Cool stuff. I'd look at him, I'd say, yeah, you'll be fine. I can hit you moving, you know. Well, my garage has my climbing wall in it. I've got some equipment that I work out with. I got a ping pong table and a wrestling mat. I'm in the house. My daughter and some basketball player from the high school are outside playing ping pong. They come in to get some lemonade or some tea, and this kid says, well, Mr. Jones, I notice you have a wrestling mat in your garage. Would you like to wrestle? Lazarus didn't get up that fast. I jumped off that couch. Lonnie Beth standing behind him going, no, Dad. Now, come out here, son. You know, I drug him out there. I said, take your right hand, put it on your left shoulder, and tap. He goes, what does that mean? I said, that means you can't breathe. And I taught him a chokehold. Called a baseball bat choke. I put a thumb underneath his collar, four fingers underneath his collar behind his head, and stick your elbows together. And in 18 seconds, he'll go to sleep. And I left him laying out there drooling on my mat. He came back the next night, ate supper at my house. Yeah, idiot, right? Stupid as a runover dog. He came back to my house because he wouldn't care how I treated him. He was interested in that little blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl lived at my house. And I could call him anything I want to and do anything I wanted to him in the garage, and he kept coming back. If I can say something or not say something, do something or not do something that makes you leave God, you and God weren't that good of friends in the first place. Quit blaming what happens in your life. And quit blaming what happens in your spiritual life on what other people do or don't do. Elijah's full of this excuse making. Now his perception is, I'm the only guy you got. They've killed everybody. They've forsaken your covenant. They've torn down your altars and they're after me. Listen to what God says to him. 1 Kings 19, verse 15. Go. Return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive there, now he's telling him, you've insulated and isolated yourself. That's not where you're supposed to be. The key to Christianity ain't running away. The key to Christianity is not isolationism. We're salt. And you got to put salt where there's no flavor. So Elijah, you didn't solve anything by being by yourself in the wilderness. You got to get back. When you get back, you anoint Hazael is king over Syria. You shall anoint Jehu the son of Nimshi as king over Israel, and you shall anoint Elisha the son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah. You shall anoint as prophet in your place. And it shall be that whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, Jehu will kill. And whoever escapes the sword of Jehu, Elisha will kill. And I have reserved 7,000 in Israel whose knees have not bowed to Baal and every mouth that has not kissed him. So Elijah's big deal is, I'm zealous. They've forsaken your covenant. They've torn down your altar. They've killed your prophets. They're going to kill me. And God says what? You anoint Hazael, Jehu, and Elisha. And what are they going to do? If somebody escapes Hazael, what's going to happen to him? Jehu will kill him. And if they get away from Jehu, who's going to get them? Does it sound like Elijah is the guy being hunted now? Lord, they're after me. Let me tell you something. You're going to anoint three people, two different kings and one prophet, and they're going to do an awful lot of killing. Lord, they're going to kill me. Lord, I'm by myself. There's 7,000 people who've never dipped their knees or puckered their lips at Baal. You're not by yourself. My people are going to do the killing. You're not by yourself. There's 7,000 people. And it's not in this story, but does Elijah get killed? Does Elijah die? He goes to heaven in a whirlwind. He doesn't even die. He's afraid they're going to kill him. Well, not only is he so wrong about dying that they don't kill him, he didn't even die. How many times have we decided the world's this way when in reality it's not? How many times have we let other people... Did you know that there's not very many Christians in America? Did you know that? Well, how come there's 212 people at a youth rally on a Saturday? How come there's 14,000 kids come to CYC? How come there's 1,700 kids go to Evangelism University? How come the most popular radio station growing in America is the listener-supported Christian contemporary music if nobody believes in God? 80% of this country believes in God. Now, they don't worship like we do, but 80% of them believe in God. They said the world was flat. They said we evolved from an amoeba. They said it's global warming. They said the ice cap is shrinking. They said the polar bears are dying. They said Hillary's going to be president. They ain't been right yet. And yet we're going to let what they do and what they say control our spirituality. They're going to let what they say and what they do control whether or not we're connected to God. When you get into a spiritual crisis, what you feel, your emotions, and what you know don't overlap. But when you take what you feel and take what you know and they overlap somewhat, you're making good decisions. But if you get caught in what I call emotion-based thinking, you'll let other people's actions or lack of actions control you. You'll let outside circumstances change your spiritual compass. You'll let something on the outside of you have control over something it doesn't own, the inside of you. And then one last thing. Look at verse 5. I mean, he cures Elijah before he ever tells him the truth. He tells him what he needs to do. As he lay down and slept under a broom tree, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and there was a cake baked of coals. There was by his head a cake baked on coals and a jar of water. And he ate and he drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came back, touched him a second time, and said, "Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you." See, when you get into a spiritual crisis, most of the time what we do is we withdraw. We get inactive and we quit feeding ourselves. How does that help you get better? If you get hurt and you don't rehab it, how does that help you get better? See, when you get injured spiritually and you quit reading and you quit studying and you quit praying and you quit fellowshipping and you don't attend worship and you don't go to Bible camp and you don't go to devos and you don't go to retreat and you don't participate in the service projects and you don't go to the youth rally, you're not ever going to get any better. And when you're discouraged and you're hurt, it is more important to act better than you feel. I'm not talking about being a hypocrite, but you don't have to feel like something to do it. You don't have to feel like being nice to somebody to be friends. You don't have to feel like being polite to be respectful to a teacher. And you don't have to feel like working out to work out. You just have to do it because you need to do it. And so when you get discouraged by difficulties and things, don't wait for your feelings to change. Change your actions, and your actions change your feelings. God told Elijah, the reason you're here by yourself and you're whining is because you won't eat and you won't be active. Now, eat and be active. You've got a job to do. And if we're going to go big and go home, we can't let outside circumstances, other people's actions, take control of things that don't belong to them. And we've got to quit insulating ourselves to the point of isolation. We've got to quit looking at other people's actions to determine ours. And we've got to look at an accurate viewpoint of the world and see this is what they say, this is what God says, and what God says is always true, not what they say. And that will help you the next time you encounter a twister or you have a spiritual crisis. Any questions or comments? Thank you for your participation. I know it's in the afternoon and you're tired. Try to stay awake for that next class. See you guys.